This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. Today we visit for the second week in a row with a pianist, this time Xiaoyin Wang, whose career has really taken off, and she'll be performing this weekend in the Downtown Concert Series in Freehold, New Jersey. I'll give details at the end of our chat. Born in China, she attended the Shanghai Conservatory and won prizes and awards and honors to a dizzying degree, then came here to the U.S. in 1997, building her career with performances in top recital halls and soloing with top U.S. orchestras. Her acclaimed recording career began 10 years later, in 2007, with a disc on the Chandos label. The heralded British label continues to record her, as does Naxos. She also has a penchant for performing and recording American music, both North and South. Composers such as the Argentinian Alberto Ginastera, the pianist-composer Earl Wilde, and a CD of three piano concertos by American composers Samuel Barber, Aaron Copland, and George Gershwin, of which you're listening to the final movement of his Concerto in F, with my guest accompanied by the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, led by Peter Unjin. I spoke with Xiaoyin Wang by phone this week. very happy to be speaking today with pianist Shine Wang. You are coming to our area this weekend to perform in Freehold in the Downtown Concert Series. So just curious right off the bat, what is your program for this concert coming up? What are you going to be playing?
Yes, I'm going to start with the Haydn Sonata, the last E-flat major sonata, number 52, his so-called the big E-flat sonata. And then I'm continuing with the Fantastück by Schumann, opus 12. And that's going to be the first half. And the second half, we'll start with Earl Weill Piano Sonata, which was written in 2000, and followed by the last piece in the program, which is Gaspard de la Nuit by Ravel.
Wow. Okay. So you've got your work cut out for you, especially in the second half.
Yeah.
Usually pianists, you know, you're a little fatigued. You're actually pushing the boundaries there in the second half. So
just got to eat some steak before.
I'm just curious, starting there, because you've told about your repertoire and this is a solo recital, I'm just curious at this point in your career, the percentage of what you do that is solo recital versus concerto appearances with orchestras. In your mind now, how is that working out percentage-wise? Is it where you want it? How do you mix and make sure that balance stays? How do you handle that in your career?
I think part of that reason has to be depending on what kind of concerts do I get from my agents. And there are orchestra concerts and there are solo recitals and there are chamber music concerts as well. So got to keep in hand these three different formalities of, you know, repertoires. And it really, really depends on what I'm being called for. But as a complete pianist, you should be able to do all three in equally well. So I love playing chamber music and love playing solo recitals and concertos. Concerto, of course, is very fun because you're, you know, playing with the whole big orchestra behind you, the kind of support, the excitement, the big sound and the rhythm, the drive, just the energy, everything is absolutely maximum. And then solo recital is very intimate. It's like myself on the stage. I'm telling stories to myself and to the audience, and it's a very intimate setup. And chamber music is an intimate teamwork that's very detailed. It's very out there. It's very naked out there to see one-on-one to another person or three or four. How do you work together? How do you make all these different sounds? How do you unify them to sound like a of one person is playing that. So all have their different tasks. And
chamber music is probably the hardest to fit in. But I'm just curious over these years, as you've had your career going now, so the reason I asked that question was, are there times when you personally, no matter what your management is saying, here's what's coming down the line, here's what you've been engaged for, blah, 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 boom, that you feel, you know, maybe it just gets a little out of balance, like you're saying, well, I've played a lot of concerto dates I'd really rather like to slip in or solo recital. I mean, do you have to sort of work on the balance with your management so you feel it fits what you want to do at this point?
No, I think right now, maybe luckily I didn't have to really tell them where I want to go for more. I think everything has been pretty much balanced. I have concertos and I have recitals. And actually, recitals are very important because concertos are fun to play, but it's alone time that's important as well.
Right.
On the stage, you'd be able to produce what you want, what's your goal on the stage just by yourself. It's a whole different picture there and a whole different feel when you play solo recital. But I think it's very balanced. I don't have any complaints. I think I have a good variety of what I'm doing.
Well, I think as our listeners heard when you said what you're going to be playing in Freehold, you know, the Haydn and the Schumann, okay. And then that second half, the Earl Wild and then the Ravel. One of the kind of interesting strains of your career so far is this engagement with American music. And I'm just curious, being an artist born in China and then coming over here, where does that start? Where does that interest in American music start with you? And why does it seem to be a real strong point in your repertoire of what you want to do?
Oh, sure. First of all, we're talking about Earl Weill. We have to start with Gershwin a little bit that's where he came from a lot of times. And even when I was in China, Gershwin's music is very widely spread and people know about him and people hear his music in China even. So like a lot of famous songs like I've Got Rhythm and Someone Watch Over Me, all these tunes are very, very popular in China as well.
Okay.
So I've heard quite a lot in China. And coincidentally, how I started is that in the year of Earl Wild passed away, and I was asked to do a CD in tribute to him. So that's how I started playing his transcriptions of Gershwin's songs.
Right.
And I discovered that he wrote actually a piano sonata, which not many people know about. And I still believe not many people know about it and not many people play it. So I picked it up, and then it happens to be one of the most wonderful things I ever played. What I also like about American music aspect is because it has a lot of jazz qualities in there, which he is very good at in bringing his jazz quality out. This piece was inspired, I think, the first movement is called March.
Mm-hmm.
In his own notes, it says it's a story that his memories of the Civil War, actually, that when his grandmother was telling him stories about Civil War and even singing him tunes that the soldiers will sing, that he actually included in this sonata. The first one is March. The second one is a very, very mysterious, almost kind of ghost hunting quality sound. It almost can remind you of the ghosts of the soldiers, like they're just blowing around them, the memories of the war. And the third movement, actually, I don't know, he jumped to Ricky Martin, who was a big, big, big idol of his. And I think he was drawn to his stage image and his personality, his artistry. So he dedicated this movement to him. So it's called the Toccata. So you can imagine him dancing on the stage. And it's a very interesting movement because the left hand has the same rhythm all throughout the whole piece. The syncopated rhythm is a very jazzy one. So you'll hear that rhythm throughout the whole Toccata. It's a brilliant, brilliant piece.
As a Latin pop artist, Ricky Martin having a big career. From my guests, Chandos recording of music by the great virtuoso pianist composer Earl Wilde on the Chandos label. Here is that final movement of his piano sonata, Toccata alla Ricky Martin, performed by Cheyenne Huang.
Thank you.
I mean, you've recorded the music of Earl Wilde, you've recorded Richard Daniel Poor, you had a recording of American piano concertos, and we should limit it to North America because you've also performed the music of Alberto Ginastera from South America. I'm just wondering, you especially building a career have to choose what you're going to spend your time on, what you're going to record, and you've really sort of attached yourself to some of this American repertoire that isn't all that well known and not even all that often recorded by American pianists. I'm just curious on how that interest sort of welled up at you. So,
yeah, I think it's good to explore, and it's very interesting. I have to think to myself why I ended up with South America and then North America.
Yeah.
I guess because I have been to these places, and I haven't had a chance to meet composers from other countries, I don't know. But with the Ginastera, it was a big project of Shandell's recording label. And was also in time for the celebration of his, I believe, was 100 years.
Right.
It was last year.
Yeah.
Yes, anniversary. So, as you know, we always want to coordinate ourselves to celebrate the composers. We always celebrate. And his piano concertos are probably the most difficult things I ever played.
Yeah.
The most, I don't know, wonderfully in a weird way. So weirdly wonderful, but it's absolutely something very unique, very unforgettable, because he kind of went mentally crazy at the end of his life, so it definitely shows in his piano music.
Yeah.
So this is how I have told myself, okay, it's a huge project. I recorded all his three piano works, so Piano Concerto 1 and 2 and the Concerto Argentino, which he actually wrote when he was younger, in a younger age. Big difference.
Yeah, Ginastera had that sort of morphing of styles throughout his career, first, you know, drawing into the folk music of Argentina and then becoming a modernist, and none of the stuff is easy, and it can be sort of an interesting way to tackle it. You said your interest in American music and, you know, the South American music, because you were to these countries, and obviously you moved here in 97, but, you know, you got to know the music of those countries. Well, you're born in China, so I'm wondering, is there any thought, desire, obligation to promote music of Chinese composers on your part, either in recital or eventually in recording? I mean, where does the music of your birthland, where does that lay with you as far as promoting it?
Well, you know, there are Chinese music that's a lot written not originally for piano.
Right.
There are lots of transcriptions that later on other composers have transcribed for piano, because, you know, there are a lot of Chinese traditional instruments which the folk music is for. But I have always include, if just a little encore, something from China, a little folk song that's originally written for example, two-string fiddle. It's the erhu, a Chinese instrument. I would play the transcription that's transcribed for the piano. So we have a lot of music like that, a transcription originally written for other instruments. But nowadays, of course, there are still composers from my birthland that writes the traditional way, but there are so many are following the contemporary path. You can even find maybe composers in China that writes like Ginastera.
Right.
Or I don't know, just the modern take, the modern path.
Yeah,
they're not the traditional path anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have interest in performing any of their music or checking it out? Or I mean, do you have that interest inside of you? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As soon as I have time, as soon as I am done, if I have nothing that's on my agenda, I can have some free time to learn some new repertoire. Absolutely.
And we should say your recordings that you have... They're not on any small fly-by-night label. They're on one of the major classical labels of the world, Brian Cousins' English label Chandos, which has been around for decades and has always had the highest quality. And how did that happen? How did you end up on Chandos? I'd be curious for the story.
So I did record for Naxos as well.
Yeah.
And I think actually we started with the idea of the Earl Wilde CD. Chandos was interested first. So I had the proposal to Naxos and Shandell's, but Shandell was very interested. Yes, so that's how I started the relationship with Shandell ever since after.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great relationship. I mean, they continue to be a great label, even as the record industry has changed. And you have a record on Naxos, the chamber music CDs.
Yes, I have.
I have come out on Naxos.
Yes, yes, that's right. I have a new album coming out in February, which will be Goyesca, or works by Granados. So it will be Goyesca's and the Allegro di Concerto, and one or two other smaller pieces by Granados.
Okay.
So now I go to Spanish.
I was going to say, now you go to the Spanish repertoire.
Yeah.
My guest has recorded the difficult, sometimes thorny, and wildly virtuosic Piano Concerto No. 2 by Argentinian composer Alberto Ginastera with the BBC Philharmonic, led by Juanjo Mena. Following the first movement, a set of 32 variations on a theme of Beethoven, here is the second movement, Scherzo. I always, pianists who have a big career ahead of them still, you still got a lot of years in your career. I'm just interested how you see your strengths as a pianist. I know the New York Times quote, which is really great. you know, the estimable grasp of pianistic color and her ability to maintain and illuminate a strand of melody within the thickest of textures. That's a nice thing to say. I'm just curious.
Thank you.
But as you get these reviews that, you know, your playing is so impressive and it blah, 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 boom, you know, all these good reviews. What do you think are your strengths as a pianist? I mean, you can always work on stuff. You can always improve things. But you've had a really good career so far. So I'm just curious. What do you think are your strongest points as a pianist?
First of all, there's always so many things to improve, and I think it's endless learning process until everybody gets old. I think it's always life is learning. So, but I do think the most important thing for me, for my piano playing and to myself, is that I have this very close feeling that how I want to tell the story. Everybody can play the same piece, but it definitely comes out differently because it's different. The story is told differently. I think I am able to tell it in a very attractive, effective, it makes sense to me. So if it's a different kind of way to tell it, it moves me first, and then I move the audience to ask for their attention, to be joining in the story and then to go through the journey together. I think I'm able to maintain this interest, make it interesting. Not just to make it interesting, just to make something different. But to make it unforgettable, to make it very memorable, just go deep down to their hearts, to reach out in their hearts and make them cry. That's what I'm looking for. And that's what I practice to myself, too. I like going through these little, you know, roller coaster, emotional roller coaster things in my playing and in the music, of course. It's the music that moves me first. So that's what I like to experience.
So, I mean, we were talking about whether you do music by, you know, either new Chinese composer, new American composers. It would be important to you that the music has a narrative. You like to have that.
That's not necessarily has to be like in every piece. But what I meant is that I have to tell the story.
Oh, okay.
Not that it has to have a title or something. I mean, there is a background of the piece.
Right.
But even like, for example, if you play the sonata or by somebody, right. It's just also how you transform it in your own way to the audience.
Yeah, I mean, the Haydn sonata can have a narrative without having a story behind it.
Right.
Yeah, the tonal shifts and everything, how it's structured, it can take the listener on a journey from the beginning to the end, all that type of stuff. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a maturity issue with pianists. You know, you feel confident that you're telling the right story to the audience, if you want to use your words. And, you know, that comes with maturity, as I think it's shown in a lot of the reviews of your playing.
Oh, thank you.
Rachmaninoff's set of études tableaux, or study pictures, for which the composer provided no images, have been recorded by my guest today, Cheyenne Wang. Here, from the Opus 33 set, are the numbers 6 and 7, the first garnering the Russian nickname the Snowstorm. Thank you. So just because how your background and what's happened in your life, I think our listeners might be interested. So you're born in China. You start playing around the age of five. So obviously your talent was recognized early. Boy, you know, she's got great talent here. What happens? I know you went to the Shanghai Conservatory, but what happens in the Chinese society when a child like yourself, this child has talent? So what are the next steps then before you enter into a conservatory? What happens?
Oh, yeah. I think my private lessons started when I was five in my home city, which is Hangzhou. My parents were told by my music teacher at the school, at the kindergarten, I think I was still at the kindergarten. And she said I would stay behind everybody and stay in the classroom and try to imitate what the teacher just played, the song, the tunes, to try to imitate it with, of course, with the wrong fingerings, but I pressed the right keys and everything. So she said, you guys might want to just start considering some piano lessons for her, and that's how we started. But nowadays, I think almost, I don't know, maybe one out of five kids play the piano, or at least some instrument.
I mean, there's so many people playing music in China, especially kids playing piano. So, I mean, you know, if you want to call it the long, long effect, I don't know when that came into your consciousness. But I mean, you're playing as a kid, you're going to enter the Shanghai Conservatory. Is it the same kind of timeline as it is over here? So you're going to be in your teens, or are you set on that path that music's going to be your career and you know that it's a given that you'll probably be entering, in this case, the Shanghai Conservatory? I mean, is it kind of, this is your path for you?
I think mentally a child is not fully developed to make decisions.
Right.
So I would say my parents did decide for me, but I think they did the right thing for me. It was the right path to go. I'm not quite sure if in America they have this kind of, like the Shanghai Conservatory, which I went, was a boarding school from age nine.
Okay.
So I would live in the school and then get up and practice in the morning and have classes and practice more and then go to sleep with like 24 other girls in the bunk beds in the big room. I don't know if they have it, but I think here you have pre-college, which is like a Saturday whole thing and theory that classes and then all that. But we had the Shanghai Conservatory provided for even from age nine. It's just heavy focus on music and theory. So I went through that and very thankful for that because I learned a lot of my big foundations there.
So you're there and you win a lot of prizes, a lot of awards, a lot of honors. And there's a lot of kids at the conservatory studying, a lot of pianists studying. Someone like yourself who has a lot of success there, does that elevate you? I'm just curious because I'm thinking of like high school years here for kids or kids who are in conservatories here, be it Curtis or whatever. You know, does that kind of elevate you? Were you kind of the celebrity of of your grade? I mean, I mean, you had so many honors there. Do you kind of get your star material over there? Is that how it works or?
You mean while I was...
While you were there, yeah. I mean, you're winning all these awards and honors, and you're a student there. So obviously, is there kind of a celebrity status that goes with that because you're one of the top students?
No.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I don't know.
I think it's not something that I think in the school that will kind of do, because I think all students are coming for the same reason. They learn. But of course, I think the teachers know. Teachers know who is on what level and everything. And also whenever if there was like a foreigner, like another guest artist coming to perform or to give master classes, maybe some of the better students will get more chances to play or to perform for them. I guess maybe that's a little bit more different, but I think we didn't have any like a separate celebrity kind of treatment or anything like that, or recognition. Just keep going, has to be better all the time.
I know. But you were winning a lot of these awards and things, so you had quite a bit of success. So then...
Thank you.
In 97, for an artist like yourself who has a lot of success in their homeland, you've been in this conservatory since you were nine, you've been playing since you were five. When you had to come here, was there a little bit of a restart button? I mean, for the point that you were at in your career at that time. And when you came over here, what was the adjustments you had to make when you came here?
Mm-hmm. First of all, the language. That was a big deal because I was a little slow with the language and I didn't know too many American friends here. So usually when you just talk with your own people from your own land, and the English doesn't get improved. But after that, yes, I think it is kind of a new starting point, because it's like even here when you say you're 18, you're like an adult. So life is different, like a lot of point of views have changed, how you view things, opinions have changed. And also it's a whole entire different environment for American school, music schools in China, the Shanghai Conservatory. Over here, the system is totally different. I think that adjusting was not too bad for the school system. Language was difficult, but
right. But
I think here, for like the classes, for lessons and everything, I think it was not too difficult for me to adapt to. But I would say maybe a little more self-decision-making in your own music learning.
Did you come over by yourself, or were you one of your parents?
Yeah,
with you?
I came by myself.
Wow, yeah, that is, all of a sudden you're an adult. And that's been 20 years now. So, and you know, 10 years after that, your first recording came out around 2007, something like that. So the career is going the way you hoped it is, and the way you want it to go. I mean, you're sort of on track with where you want to be as an artist at this point?
Of course, I would like to play, perform as much as possible.
Sure.
But also having a family, you know, it's a whole different story. So I'm going to try to do what I can and try to be out there and sharing with people what I can share with them. But I would say I'm going to keep trying more. Absolutely. It's hard to say, okay, I'm very satisfied.
Sure. But I mean, if you look back and you think, wow, you know, 10 years ago.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I have so many recordings. I even said, I want to have 11. I don't know when I did them. I don't remember.
Yeah, it goes by fast.
I don't remember. Yeah.
And you said the next recording is Spanish music, because I was going to ask, as far as repertoire, I mean, what's ahead for you? Pianists are no shortage of repertoire. You're not playing viola here or bassoon. So you've got tons of things you could play. I'm just curious on what's on the short list, you know, 3 years down the line, 5 years down the line. What, either pieces or composers, what do you want to get into that you still haven't had time to do yet? I mean, what direction are you going?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think I also have a recording project coming up with the Royal Scottish Symphony Orchestra in Glasgow in April. That's who I recorded American Concertos with, and the Tchaikovsky to Katya Turin. So we're going to do Tchaikovsky 1 and 3 and Scriabin Piano Concerto.
Okay.
Scriabin Piano Concerto is also a beautiful concerto, which is not played enough. It should be heard more. It should be played more, performed more. So that's my next project. I'm definitely learning more Brahms, because I think I don't have enough Brahms in my repertoire.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to learn as much as I can. And of course, there are certain boundaries of what kind of pieces might not be too easy on the ears for the audience or something, but it's definitely worth learning. For example, Bohemian Stereo Piano Concertos, I don't think many orchestras would want to perform it. First of all, it's just very, very, very challenging for the orchestra and the pianist. And someone has to have a very open ears for this piece. So, but some people might be very interested, so you never know. So I'm going to just keep doing what I'm doing and then learn more and more in a different aspect of all different varieties of piano music. And maybe hopefully meet somebody who's not in North America and the South America composers. So next time you can ask me another.
You record some Richard Danielpour. Do you have interest in living composers as well, sort of learning, sort of moving out in that direction as well, spending some time with the newest music for your instrument? Or?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yes. Yeah. Discovering more music by living composers, because they have the freshest point of view of what the society, the music society, has been become, you know, the most updated music genre. I have some friends too, like composer friends too. They have actually lots of interesting music that's sitting on my piano. I just don't have time to go through them.
Yeah, once they find out you're a great pianist, you'll get a lot of scores from composer friends saying, please play this. From a recording on the Naxos label of American composer Richard Danielpour's book of piano preludes called The Enchanted Garden, here's my guest, Cheyenne Wang, performing the prelude number 5 from book 1, titled simply Night. We talked about rep that you want to do. I'm just curious, too, because you've played around the world, but is there some place, a venue experience or some place you haven't played yet, which, like, boy, I can't wait to get on that stage or play there? And that's, I mean, is there some place yet you still haven't played where you want to?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there are many beautiful places in the world. Oh, gosh, it's hard to say. I'd like to make back home sometime, actually.
Yeah,
I actually haven't been back home for over 10 years. So
okay.
It's, a lot of things have changed, and they have many, many beautiful new halls over there. And I'm trying to make it to perhaps, I've been to Washington, D.C., but I've never played at the Kennedy Center. I heard it's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a great
place.
And
the Kodak Theater in L.A., these are big venues, but I think except whatever comes to me,
well,
I don't have too much choices to choose. But I would like to play for also, if I have a chance in the future, I think it's a good thing to do, play for kids. I think play for a lot of kids. I think it's important to continue education for the next generation, to play for them or to play for people who can't hear music very much.
Yeah.
Like they don't have an opportunity to hear performances live, like places like that.
Yeah, do outreach type of concerts.
Definitely.
Well, we're glad you're coming to St. Peter's on Throckmorton Street in Freehold this weekend and playing there.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful small little venue. It's a nice concert series. I close all my Cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two questions. And the first is a hypothetical, which says, if you could chat like we've been chatting with someone from the past, someone you never had a chance to talk with but could, when I ask that, what's the first name that pops into your head? Who would you love to speak with?
Who would I love to speak with?
Usually if you think about it, you get swamped with a lot of names. But when I asked what was the first name that just popped into your head?
Gosh, I just had somebody in my mind a few days ago because I was watching some videos. But I would say, let's say Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella Fitzgerald, wow. Wow, it's a surprise, for one. I wasn't expecting you to go there. You're the first person in 13 years to pick Ella, and it's great. I love Ella.
Are you just
a big fan, just a big fan of hers and how she interprets songs and her style and all that stuff?
Absolutely, and her gorgeous voice. Absolutely. But there are so many people.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. You only gave one chance.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have an interest in American jazz, or at least there's a strain of you that really responds to American jazz. Is that true?
I do. I'm very fond of jazz. Yes.
Yeah.
I cannot play real like improvisation styles or anything like that, but I love listening to jazz.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, the final question is a non-musical question, meaning everybody I interview on Cadenza fills their life with music. You're very busy with your career. And the question is, when you have to get away from music, what do you do? Pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment that they can take you away. Now, before we turn the mics on, I know that you're very busy because you have someone in your life who's 3 years old and you're their mother. So that takes a lot of your time. But I'm just curious what you could do. I mean, is that your respite from music there, is to watch your child grow? Is that it, what you're doing right now?
If something to really relax me a little bit, I like cooking.
Ah, very good.
I really love cooking, make food for her and make food for myself and for my husband if I have time. But now these couple weeks is very busy, so I don't have time to cook. But I like watching movies, let's say.
Yeah.
Watch documentaries. Usually I really love watching documentaries. Yeah.
You're watching some kids shows too. I'm sure you are at some point.
Oh yeah, I memorized all these words already in the songs of Mickey Mouse.
Yeah,
Muska, Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, you've got a few more years of that ahead of you.
Yeah, I could probably do a book of that. Yes.
Cheyenne Wong, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you.
Pianist Cheyenne Wong. You can find out more about her at her website, CheyenneWongPiano.com. Cheyenne, XIAYIN, Wong, WANG, piano.com. Her recent recordings are being released on either Chandos or Naxos, both distributed by Naxos. Check them out at Naxos.com. She'll be appearing in the Downtown Concert Series this Saturday at 7:30. Concerts held at St. Peter's Church, 33 Throckmorton Street in Freehold, New Jersey. Her program, music of Haydn, Schumann, Earl Wilde, and Maurice Ravel. You can check out tickets at 732-431-8383 or downtownconcertseries.org. I'll leave you with the closing minutes of the massive first movement of Tchaikovsky's lesser-known or performed piano concerto, the Concerto No. 2 in G Major, the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, led by Peter Ungen, the soloist, my guest today, pianist Cheyenne Wong. And as always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org.